While this is Mary Magdalene Sunday, in which we observe the feast day of Mary Magdalene, whose technical feast day was on Friday, it's also one of the only opportunities we in the Episcopal Church have to have a reading from the book of Judith. And the book of Judith was written sometime in the Second Temple period, sometime between 530 BCE and 70 CE, and you would be forgiven for not having heard of it, perhaps, or read it in your Bible, because it's actually an apocryphal text, which means that when people were, over the course of hundreds of years, trying to decide on what the canon, what the proper books of the Bible were going to be, that for various reasons, Judith didn't make the cut. So instead, she, along with other books such as Sirach, 1st and 2nd Maccabees, belong in what we call the Apocrypha, holy books and holy stories, even though they aren't in our Protestant Bibles. And the story of Judith is an interesting one. It's perhaps one of our earliest works of historical fiction, because you see, there are several anachronistic details, several details about her life that clearly it's not literally true. But the question of whether or not it really happened obscures the more important question of what is true about it. Judith is the feminized name of Judah, possibly connecting her to another famous story of the Maccabees, which you may have heard of. It's the successful miracle that is remembered in Hanukkah. And her story is often paired by early scholars with David and Goliath, with David's defeat of Goliath. And her story has been influential not just to Christians in their theology, but also to artists. Her story has been painted from everyone from Caravaggio to Gustav Klimt to my personal favorite, one of the few prominent Baroque female painters, Artemisia Gentileschi. And so today, I want to do something perhaps a bit unusual for us here. I want to tell you the story of Judith, because I think it's a story that we so often don't get to hear, and one that perhaps has a lot to tell us today. The story of Judith starts with a powerful man named Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar was the king of the Assyrians, and like many of his time, like many kings in particular, he was very concerned with gaining more power. King Nebuchadnezzar was fighting with many of his neighboring nations in order to take them over. And so in an effort to build his army, in an effort to make sure that he won, Nebuchadnezzar sent messengers to all the lands around, as far as Ethiopia, to ask for them to send soldiers to fight for him. And some of them did respond, but a fair number of them, including our dear friends the Israelites, came back empty-handed. They didn't send soldiers to fight for Nebuchadnezzar. And so, after waging his campaign, when he was triumphant, when he had won the battle, when he had won the war, Nebuchadnezzar found himself bothered by this fact. And his rage was such that he called in his general, the second most powerful person in the land, a man named Holofernes. And he said to his general, "I want you to regather the troops, and I want them to come out, and I want you to go and destroy everyone who didn't send troops to fight for me. Not only do I want you to destroy them, I want you to utterly annihilate them, to remove them from the face of the earth, destroy their sacred groves, destroy everything about them, for such is my rage." And the general said, "Okay." So Holofernes gathers his men, and he takes off. And he reaches several of the nations that are nearby, and he utterly annihilates them. And soon word is spreading throughout all of the other nations that this general and this fearsome army is coming their way in retribution for when they didn't fight for the king Nebuchadnezzar, who believes himself to be a god. And so, as they went forth, there were emissaries sent, and they tried to sue for peace. They said to the general, "We prostrate ourselves in front of you. Everything we have is yours. Please have mercy on us and don't destroy us." And the general listened to their pleas, and then he destroyed them. And so, as news of this spread to Jerusalem, the Israelites found themselves very afraid, rightfully so, of this army that was coming their way. And they had just gotten back. They had just come back from being in exile for so long. They had just reconsecrated the temple. They were just getting on their feet after so much struggle. And so to hear that this army was coming their way, it was deeply terrifying, deeply defeating. And so they sent out messengers to the hills around Jerusalem, to these villages, and they told them, "We need to get ready because this army is coming. And if we can secure these hills, then we hope, we can prevent the army from marching in, because you see, it's so narrow to go through these hills that only two can go at once. Surely we can control them, we can stop them, if we can control the hills around the city." And so they did this. And as Holofernes and his army came closer and closer, they became more and more nervous. And they knew from their history, the history of their people, they knew that God's deliverance for them was very closely tied to how they keep their own covenant with God. That the times when they had been unfaithful, that they had not kept to the law, that those had been the times when they had been taken out, when they had been sent into exile. And so the people began repenting and gnashing their teeth, wearing their sackcloth and ashes, which was a symbol of penitence, and they began to lament and cry out to God for God's deliverance. And so as the general came ever closer, he was approached by some of the neighboring people in the area. And they said, "General, listen. You don't need to go in there and try to defeat them. They're hidden behind these hills. They have walls. They have supplies. You're going to lose too many men. Instead, what you should do is seize their water supply, because you see, there was a spring that fed all of Jerusalem, all of the hills around it." And the general thought about this for a moment and said, "Okay, sounds like a pretty good idea. I like the idea of not losing any troops and still winning." And so the general took the springs, cut off the water supply from the people. And as you can imagine, this was a time of great hardship for the people in the city and in the hills. They found themselves dying of thirst, a thirst that couldn't be quenched. Their crops were failing because they didn't have their water, and they were looking ahead at what was to be a long and profound suffering on the part of their people, where probably no one was going to live. And so the people, as the people do, cried out to their leaders, and they said, "You have to save us. We can't do this. We're dying in the streets. We're so thirsty. You have to save us." And the leaders, even though they had made this pledge that they were going to fight against the enemy, even though they were trying to be faithful to God and keep the covenant, the leaders were so moved with pity by the people's plea that they said, "Okay, If God hasn't delivered us in 5 days, then we'll go out and we'll surrender. We'll surrender to the army. Now, enter Judith. Judith is a wealthy widow who lives in one of the villages in the hills. And she's remarkable in the way that she's introduced for several reasons. One is that she's introduced by name. After all, she's the namesake of our book. And she's also described as being a very devout woman. She is not only devout, but when her husband died, he apparently had a heat stroke during the barley harvest. He left all of their land and possessions to Judith. And so Judith was actually the one running their family's estate. She was the one in charge. It's very unusual for that time. Widows are often spoken of in the Bible as a people to be taken care of, to be pitied, and Judith was certainly not that widow. And so Judith, upon hearing what the Israelite leaders had done, she beckoned them to her. And she said, "What have you done? You know better than this. You know better than to put the Lord God to the test. What have you done?" And the leaders, rather sheepishly perhaps, said, yeah, we know. No, you're right. You're totally right. Totally right. Should not have done that. Should not have given God the whole five-day ultimatum. Not good. But listen, Judith, we did it. We made a covenant with the people that after 5 days, we can't break our word. We can't go back on this. So Judith is like, okay, I'm going to take care of this. You guys, just go back to where you came from. Don't ask me any questions about what I'm going to do. And I'm going to take care of this. And so she goes back. And she says, listen to me. I'm about to do something that will go down through all generations of our descendants. And the leaders say, go in peace. And at this point, we see our reading for today from the book of Judith. Before she goes out, Judith prostrated herself, put ashes on her head, uncovered the sackcloth that she was wearing, all of these traditional signs of mourning. And she calls out to God. And what's interesting is the piece, as you see, we have verse 1 and then it skips to 11. So part of what we miss is that Judith actually starts out by calling to God in the name of women. She calls out to God and reminds God of all the times when God has failed to protect women. And she asks for the right, as it was in ages past, to be allowed to enact vengeance to right the wrongs done. And she ends her appeal by saying, O God, my God, hear me also, a widow. It is from her position as a widow, as a woman, that she calls out to God for the deliverance of her people. And so at this point, she takes off her widow's clothing. She hauls out maybe something she hadn't worn in years, who knows, but it was these beautiful garments. She fixes her hair. She gets ready. She's described in the text as being so beautiful. And she goes out with her maid through the city gates. And everyone's kind of like, whoa, hey, Judith. Haven't seen you wearing that in a while. She walks out onto the field. Remember, this is the opposing army. So she's walking out right into the midst of the opposing army. The soldiers, who are scouts, doing their job, they come to her and they say, what are you doing out here? Do you not know where you are? And Judith's like, well, I just came out here to like warn you guys. And, you know, the Israelites are not really doing what they're supposed to do. So their God's probably going to forsake them. And I just wanted to like let you guys know. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's totally normal. So they take her back to camp. They take her back not only to camp, but to the tent of the general, Holofernes. And so when she's taken there, she begins speaking with them and tells them that God has told her that she has to go out into the field every morning and pray, and that God will let her know when they're ready to attack, when the Israelites have been sufficiently unfaithful. And so the general says, "Excellent. Blessed are you among women. Welcome to the camp. We're so glad to have you. Also, you're really beautiful, and I'd like to keep you close by." And so she ends up staying right next to his tent. And I love this line in particular. As he's talking to her, he's having this big banquet started because he wants to impress her and perhaps woo her. And he asks her if she wants some of his wine. And she says, "No, I'm good. I brought some of my own. Not a worry." And the general said to her, "If your supply runs out, where can we get you more of the same? For none of your people are here with us." Judith replied, "As surely as you live, my lord, your servant will not use up the supplies I have with me before the Lord carries out by my hand what he has determined." She's like, come on. Like, if I heard that, I'd be like, I'm a little nervous right now. Like, what does that mean? But the general, Holofernes, apparently seeing no red flags there, decides that now's the time to start the banquet. And so she comes in, his heart was ravished with her and his passion aroused as he had been waiting for this opportunity. And so, the text says, he drank a great quantity of wine, much more than he had ever drunk in any one day since he was born. Probably a great phrase to just bring back in general. And so when the evening came, the general was dead drunk, the text says. He was laying on the mat, and all of the other people departed. And they left Judith in the tent. And so Judith walked over. She said a prayer. She took the sword off the wall from beside his bed, and she cut off the head of the general. It's all in the Bible, I tell you. You don't need Game of Thrones or anything like that. It's all here. And so Judith, having accomplished her task, she went out and gave the head to her maid, who put it in her food bag. I guess you got to put it somewhere, I don't know. And then they departed. Because at this point, it was almost morning. And she departed every morning to go pray in the field, so no one in the camp thought anything was strange with that. And so they all let her pass, her and her maid. And so Judith came back to the village. She came back to the leaders, and she took out the head from the bag and said, "Look, look what I have done." And then she said, "You have to march out now, because they don't know that he's dead yet, and as soon as they see you coming, they're going to gather up all of their troops, and they're going to try to attack, and then they're going to go find their general and find him dead." And so the Israelites, clearly trusting that Judith was onto something here, gathered up all of their people and they marched out to provoke the army. And the army, seeing them coming, ran into the tent of their general and said, "Wake up, sir, wake up!" Only to find that their general was no more. And they were so frightened, they were so thrown by this, that they scattered, this mighty army ran back to where they came from. They left everything behind, even the tent of their general, and the Israelites came and took the spoils. Judith was given Holofernes' tent, which she dedicated to the Lord. And then the text tells us that all the women of Israel gathered around her and blessed her. She took ivy-wreathed wands in her hands and distributed them to the women who were with her. She went before all the people in the dance, leading all the women, while the men of Israel followed, bearing their arms and wearing garlands and singing hymns. Our story about Judith concludes with her song, which hearkens and reminds us of the many other songs, Song of Mary, the Magnificat, Song of Hannah, these songs that were sung in praise and thanksgiving. And the text tells us that Judith died at the ripe old age of 105, renowned by her people, and never remarried. Maybe it's just because I had a really strong emotional reaction to Wonder Woman recently. But reading the story of Judith in our own tradition, I was so struck by it. It's such a powerful story. Scholars call Judith one of the most defined and most powerful female characters that we have. She saves her people through her willingness to act, and history pivots on her response. So, what is true about Judith's story? There is her faith, her courage, this willingness to act, that this salvation was brought forth for her people by a woman, by a widow. And it's included in today's text on Mary Magdalene's feast day in many ways because Mary Magdalene is the first apostle, the apostle to the apostles. We hear in our gospel today that Jesus told her to go tell all of the men who were cowering in the room, they were so frightened, to go tell them about the resurrection. She is our first witness, our first apostle, our first evangelist. And it's a reminder to us that our faith has been carried by women for ages. Even when our church fathers have tried to write out women or ignore their contributions. After all, what stories do you remember learning growing up? I don't remember learning very much about Deborah, who was a judge and general, who commanded troops and was so well respected in her time. I don't remember learning about Yael, whose story, spoiler alert, is very similar to Judith. I don't remember learning very much about the people of Rachel and Leah and Hagar and Sarah. These strong, smart, and cunning women of our tradition. And so at this time in our country, where we so often see our leaders trying to control or demean women's bodies, voices, and contributions. Hear me then when I say, if we don't know our own story, if we don't know who we are as a people of faith, then we run the risk of letting others tell our story for us. After all, have people tried to tell you that women have no place in leadership, in our world and in our church? Have people tried to tell you that priests can only be men because the apostles were only men? I wonder if they have read the gospel, if they have met Mary Magdalene and heard her story, the first apostle to the apostles. I wonder if they have read the story of Judith, the story of Deborah and Yael, of Rebecca, Rachel, and Leah. Are we a people who know our own story, our Christian story, or will we let others tell it for us? And so, my brothers and sisters, I ask you now, how is God calling you to be strong now, like our sister Judith? How can you lean on the example of those who have gone before you to find that strength And how will we answer God's call today? Amen.